All right, here's another one of these instances where your friend Scott, I'm constantly reminded that I truly am dumb as a brick. It's true, I'm dumb as a brick. I'd like to think, oh, I know lots of things, and then every now and then something comes across, I'm like, what is that? I've never heard of that. What is that? And so recently, since I've been a lifelong journalist, I came across something. I'm like, I have no idea what that is. Page Center, I have no idea what that is. I want to find out more. So there's an event coming up next week and run by the Page Center from Penn State. And we want to welcome into our humble studios Denise Bortry and Jonathan McVary. Now, folks are sharing a mic, so you're going to have to lean in there a little bit, all right? First of all, thanks for both of you to coming out today. Appreciate your time this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
All right. You're welcome. This event, well, let's start from scratch, okay? First off, for the two of you, you're with the Page Center at Penn State. Let's find out just about you. Denise, why don't you go first? Tell us something about yourself, your background, you know, where you're from, all that sort of stuff. Go right ahead.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, thanks for having us today. My name is Denise Bortry. I'm the director of the Page Center. I'm also the associate dean for academic affairs in the Belisario College at Penn State. And I've been the Page Center director for, I think, 10 years, going on 10 years now. And my background is I was faculty member at in the College of Communications. I research around issues of integrity, ethics, sustainability, nonprofit communication. And the center's just been a passion of mine since I started directing it. We focus on research that is in the space of ethics, and so I love being able to set the vision and be able to offer events like the one we're going to talk about today.
All right. Wow. Jonathan, how about you?
My name is Jonathan McVary. I'm the communications manager for the Page Center. Sometimes Denise misspeaks and refers to me as the director, and I embrace that wholeheartedly. I've been the communications manager for about 10 years. I came in about 6 months after Denise became the director. And I just wanted to share the full name. So we are the Arthur W. Page Center for Integrity and Public Communication. Kind of what Denise said, we do three prongs of funding research, developing education opportunities, and outreach events like the one next week.
All right, now that must make a great business card. The Arthur Page Center for whatever you just said. I have no idea. That's a big, long title.
Now, Belisario College of Communication.
We got
there you go.
Do you get sued if you don't mention Mr. Belisario? That's part of the deal. Right? Yeah, okay. And again, I mentioned our humble abode because I've been over to Carnegie a number of times, and wow. I just like, wow.
Yeah.
Because now Jeff's an alum who remembers back in the day. Did you do any of this stuff?
Not quite the same equipment that we had access to back in the late 1980s and early 90s.
Yeah, and I'm proudly wearing my alum sweatshirt because it's cold today. And yes, I when I think about what I used in college, and I walk into Carnegie, I'm like, holy fright! Look at this; is fantastic.
It is. It's very.
Now tell us, Denise, impressive. What? Okay, you gave a nice title. What is the Page Center? In other words, what? And I'm embarrassed because I'd never heard of the Page Center until I saw this recently. And I found your website. I'm like, wow, this is really great. I've never heard of this. So tell us, what is the Page Center and sort of what do you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think you're not alone in not knowing what the Page Center is. We are, I think, emerging more just recently because of some of this work that we're doing, some of the outreach that we've been doing. But we were established in 2004, so we've been around for quite some time. And the focus of the center is funding research. So we're unique in the sense that we are a funding institution. We give money to scholars who do research in the space of ethics, transparency, truth-telling, and the center not only looks at media journalism, but looks at corporate communication, public communication, and that's been, you know, our priority from the beginning. We've been a funding institution, and we've given over $1 million in research funding and funded, what, 200 plus?
Well, over 300.
Over 300 now scholars since the beginning.
All right. Now, Arthur Page, Mr. Page, who was Mr. Page? Because I don't know who he was.
That's a great question.
That is a great question.
So I'm also a Belisario College alum, and when I applied for the job, I just assumed Arthur Page was a big donor, a big alumni. But as far as I know, he's never been to Penn State. He's never even heard of State College. But he was basically the first public relations the first CCO of a major company, AT&T, back in the early 1900s. He did a lot of things. He was an advisor for a couple presidents. He wrote for magazines and books. But from our perspective, he was the first guy to run the communications for AT&T, which at the time was a new. He's known as the godfather or grandfather of public relations.
Huh.
So then, fast forward, I don't know, 60, 70 years. Larry Foster, who is a distinguished alumnus from Penn State and the Belisario College, has donated lots of money. As far as I know, was just a great admirer of Arthur Page and wanted this center to kind of revolve around his psyche or his principles of communications and delivering, you know, being honest with the public, giving them the right information at the right time, things like that.
Wow.
So it's a bit unusual, I think, the connection to Penn State. But in that circle, Arthur Page is a big name in the public relations circle.
You got something? Go ahead.
Yeah, a very open-ended question. But as a society, how are we doing with ethics and truth-telling when it comes to, the media and companies in general?
Yeah, I think that's a
loaded question.
It is an interesting question. I would say maybe not well, as far as truthfulness, transparency, and lack of disinformation and misinformation. I think we're seeing so much more of that today, and that's part of what we're looking at. And I think the introduction of artificial intelligence, social media, all these other things just complicate the situation even more and give platforms for bad actors who want to spread misinformation and disinformation.
Let me just follow up, because that's my impression as well. I think part of it, and this is just me surmising, but we've talked about it a lot on this program over the years. When I graduated from Penn State, they don't like me telling this publicly, they don't like to take ownership of me being an alum, but 1992 went on the 5-year plan, exactly, full transparency. Just on a local front, when I first came in, we started over across town at WRSC. At that time, WRSC had a news director, mm-hmm. two part-time reporters, and at least two interns, five-person news department. And I came in and was on the sports side of things, and I covered news stories. It's like, hey, we're shorthanded. You got to get out. It's like, okay, cool. And I got to cover news events. There was another radio station, WMAJ at the time, had a news director, had a couple of part-time reporters, had interns. 3WZ at the time had a news director. I don't think they had quite the overall numbers in terms of their department. We had a couple of TV stations that were full throttle, many local reporters. We had the Center Daily Times that had four or five local living here, out digging for stories. Folks, we now have Gary Sinderson with WJAC and a couple of reporters here and there doing some work, but a lot of the stuff that I see reported now, it's from news releases. Mm-hmm. This is Absolutely. What the company wants you to report on. Mm-hmm. This is what the politicians. There is not much, but certainly in comparison to the late 80s, in terms of folks that are digging for local stories on the reporter front, how much of the lack of transparency, maybe the lack of honesty, just comes from the changes within the media industry in general? We just do not have anywhere near the numbers we did. And even where you have reporters, and I'm using air quotes here in the studio, we don't have many that are really digging, that are what I would call investigative reporters, that, man, where I'm going to dig and find the truth here. We just don't have anywhere near the numbers that we once did. And I think these folks know it, and they know that they're not going to be held nearly as accountable as they once were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think there have been a lot of changes in journalism and in other spaces in communication that have caused some of this issue. Shrinking newsrooms absolutely are part of it, and there's just an appetite for news information, political information 24/7. But the newsrooms can't necessarily keep up with that. So we have a lot of other entities that are contributing to the conversation around news and political news specifically, and that they're not classically trained journalists, you know.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of opinion that people are misinterpreting, I think, as true news. We have at Belisario College and at schools around the country, we train journalists specifically to cover news, multiple sources, getting both sides of the story, putting together the whole story for the public to understand. And there's just, you know, the newsrooms are shrinking and the news hole is growing, I think there's just a lot of other types of information that people are getting and are believing that to be truth.
Do you see more in journalism, and again, I'll use air quotes here with journalism, but there was certainly, when I first was breaking into the business, it's like, all right, we want to be first, but what we really want is to be right. It feels to me like it is much more now, we got to be first. So, well, yeah, but you're reporting inaccurate information. Yeah, but we're the first ones to get it out there. There seems to be a shift in the emphasis. Well, as long as we get something out there and we're the ones that are breaking, even if we have to retract everything that we just reported, it's like, well, yeah, but at least we were out there first. It just seems like there's an emphasis on the first rather than the right. And again, you want to be first, but more important when I was coming in, it's like, man, whatever you report, it better be right. And so you did. You had multiple sources. Like, man, I really trust this person, but I got to find somebody. And we did. I mean, we would be on the phone. Can you verify that? And somebody eventually, you know, more often than not would. But there just does not seem to be anywhere near that degree of, yeah, boy, we got to make sure we get this right. Mm-hmm.
Jonathan, what do you think there?
Well, I was going to say I wanted to add WPSU-FM News as a
yes.
Journalist, yeah, still around.
For sure.
And doing good work.
Very good work.
But I think that's what the folks at this event are going to talk about, is kind of having to deal with that, is double-checking. You know, if you do see that first post or whatever, not, you know, doing the steps that you need to take to make sure it's true, and, you know, maybe letting it sit for you for a little while to see what else comes out of it, and just kind of dealing with the current. Because, like you said, with newsroom shrinking, those mechanisms of double checking are just not there, and maybe they can't be there in some cases. So, having those as news consumers, and I think this event's going to drive this idea of news literacy and how to handle some of these changes. And maybe kind of develop a cycle where you're understanding how this works now and learning the stuff that's true.
All right, now this event next week, this is how I got connected with you folks. First, let's get some basics. What is this event? When? Who? You know, journalism. Who, what, where, when, why, how? There we go. Yeah. Give us all the particulars of this event next week.
Exactly. So the event is called Finding Truth, Building Trust And the audience that we hope will join us are, I think you heard, I heard you say earlier about students. Yes, students. But I think mostly we have people from the community. We have communication professionals who have signed up for this event. So it's targeted to people who are communicators now or people who are interested in what's happening with media and truth-telling in society today. We have two guests and also a moderator. The moderator is Suki Dardarian. She just retired as the editor for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and they've had a lot of challenges in Minneapolis that her newspaper, I think, did a fantastic job of reporting and offering a lot of resources for transparency in the recent years. And then the other guests are John Awada, who's an executive fellow and lecturer at the Yale Program on Stakeholder Innovation and Management at Yale School of Management. But he's also leading an initiative around AI. He's working with CEOs across the country, talking about how artificial intelligence can be developed in an ethical way, thinking about consequences for humans, consequences for society. How do we move forward in a thoughtful way? And so I think he'll bring some of that to the conversation. And then Vivian Schiller is the Vice President and Executive Director of the Aspen of Aspen Digital at the Aspen Institute, a former journalist and someone who's really an expert in this space, to talk to us about how does media build trust, about how can the public sort through the information that they're getting to find truth.
All right. Where, when, what time, all those particulars?
Well, it's all online, and it's free, and you can go to thepagecenter.org to sign up. It's a quick registration. The event is on April 23rd at 10 a.m., but if you do sign up, we'll send you an email. I think Zoom will automatically send you an email with the recording, so if 10 a.m. is not your time, there'll be a recording available.
All right, so the 23rd, that's next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday.
All right. Now, and I got a little confused. At first I thought, okay, this is just for students. This is anybody can tune into this, right? I mean, literally anybody.
Yes, and we hope so. One of the things that our, you know, we call them scholars, the people who do the research for us, they're instructors and faculty members all over the world. It's not just at Penn State. So we can incorporate them to include stuff like this in their classes. But really, it's for people who do communications, it's for students, and it's for people who just read the news sometimes and kind of want to deal with some of the problems you mentioned.
Yeah. Now, will this somehow be interactive? Like, if this is all online, so can is there like a chat window they can ask a question?
There will be the last 15 or so minutes, we will have a live Q&A, and I think Denise and I will feed the questions to Suki, and she'll be able to ask John and Vivian.
This is scheduled for an hour?
Yes.
A one-hour event. So 10 a.m. next Wednesday, the 23rd, and if people want to sign up, now I have pagecenter.psu.edu, but you have...
They both work.
Same place.
Yeah.
Okay, but yours is the Page Center, thepagecenter.org.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, P-A-G-E for page. All right. All right, let's take a commercial break right here. This is an issue that we talk about a lot, and you folks clearly are involved with research of this issue, so maybe a few questions just on, I don't know, whatever the research is showing us right now. Because yeah. I kind of echo my partner. This is not the old days. Ethics? What's ethics? I don't know what ethics is. For some of these people, it's like, really? Have you ever taken an ethics course? One, just something. Anyway, let's take a break. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox. And, yeah, we'll do more talking right after this.
Let Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox make you a winner this summer with our Summer Splash Contest with Clearwater Pools and Spas in Center Hall. This Father's Day weekend, The Fox will be giving away a spacious hot springs hot tub during a Belfont cruise at Talleyrand Park in downtown Belfont. Stop by these fine locations and get signed up to become a qualifier for the contest.
The 36th Annual Historic Bellefonte Cruise coming up Father's Day weekend, June 13th and 14th. Top-notch entertainment all weekend long. It starts out Friday night with an open cruise, a sock-off, the big car show on Saturday with over 30-plus classes of cars, trucks, and motorcycles on display. Plenty of sponsorship opportunities for you. Call 814-280-5881 or visit Bellefonte Cruise.
The Farmer's Daughterer on Route 64 celebrates local food, offering raised beef from Daughterer Dairy, Boar's Head Meats, a full deli, fresh subs made to order, and don't forget, check out the daily specials, fresh baked goods, sub platters, meats and cheese trays, and so much more. Lots of local made products, now serving wraps and salads. Stop in today at 6102 Nittany Valley Drive in Mill Hall, or visit them on Facebook. Open Monday through Saturday, 11 to 8, Sunday, noon to 5. The Farmer's Daughterer in Mill Hall.
Sports fans flock to the We Are Inn in Phillipsburg for fun, great food and drink, and to cheer on the Nittany Lions. Now, coming to State College soon, visit the new Happy Valley Live by the We Are Inn next to the Hampton Inn, the former Damon's Restaurant. Happy Valley Live will become your go-to spot for sport, great Italian and American cuisine, the best bar in town, special rooms for parties and meetings. It's a Penn State fan's dream, just down the street from Beaver Stadium and the Jordan Center, and they're hiring. The countdown is on. The new Happy Valley Live is coming soon.
Finally, the soundtrack of summer is returning to the airwaves here in Happy Valley. And it's doing so right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. This year's Pittsburgh Pirates offer a mix of veteran stars.
Andrew McCutcheon has won it! They're going crazy! The Pirates have won this game!
And perhaps baseball's newest shining star.
The 2-2. He got him, and he's done it again. Paul Skeens finishes strong.
Every game, all season long, brings the promise of new excitement.
The Bucks walk it off in grand fashion.
Don't miss the action of Pirates baseball this season. The Buccos are back here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
Raise the Jolly Roger!
The Fox! Get up and get going with the Happy Valleys, 98.7 The Fox!
It's Let's Talk here on a Wednesday morning. Jeff and Scott with you. Again, we'll have a little open phone time coming up in the final segment of today's big show.
Again, we're talking with Denise Bortry and Jonathan McVary of the Page Center at Penn State, and I've already forgotten the big long title.
It's the Page. I can handle that.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's the Arthur W. Page Center for Integrity and Public Communication.
Ooh, you make T-shirts out of that. Holy mackerel, that's a big, long thing. Now, to be fair, right now, again, you folks are doing this event. It's next Wednesday, the 23rd, 10 a.m. online, yes, about trust in media. And when Jonathan, when we set up the interview, you told me, Scott, we're not the experts doing this show. We're just the folks behind the scenes arranging all this stuff. So you're not the experts here, right, so to speak. But you are, because, again, what the center does, let's see if I have this right. What the center does is you help other people do research into these various aspects of media. Correct? That's what you folks do.
Yes, correct. So every year we have a call for grant proposals on a different topic, and we get submissions from faculty from around the country and even international faculty who have projects that they need funding to complete. And so we often fund 10 to 12 projects every year. On this past year, our topic was AI. We actually just announced a couple weeks ago, I think, the projects that we're going to fund on AI and ethics. So looking at the ethics of using AI, collecting data, and the way, again, like I was saying before, the way that AI can impact society in positive or negative ways, and just things that we need to be thinking about as a society, but also that organizations need to think about, that journalists need to be thinking about. So we have a number of different topics. We've looked at sustainability. We've looked at like engaging with stakeholders, many different topics over the years.
Now, are you folks unique? I mean, are there other page centers at schools out there? I'm not familiar with this.
Not the way that we do it, no. We're pretty unique in that form.
What does that mean, then?
Like, there's the folks that we consider peers, it's like the Institute for Public Relations, but their purview is completely different. But, you know, there's a lot of overlap in people and resources. There's a Planck Center at Alabama.
University of Alabama.
And they're more like mentorship. But, you know, we talk. But in terms of studying ethics at this level, I believe we're the only ones.
Well, really? Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about, I'll call them big-time journalism schools, Missouri, maybe Syracuse, Northwestern. Mm-hmm. They don't have anything like this?
Yeah, and I think that the difference, they do. Oregon, they do have centers that focus on journalism ethics. We're broader. We're public communication. So we look a lot at corporate communication because that's all part of the mix, right? It's not just about journalism. It's about what are the companies saying? What are people saying online? What are people saying in social media? So we kind of step back and look at all of the communication sphere.
That's a big world.
It is. And I would say we're the only center that does funding like we do. A lot of other centers, they fund their own internal scholars at their universities. Sure. But we're funding what we try to do is find the experts. So you don't always have all the experts at your university, right? So we try to find the experts no matter what university they're at and fund them to do the research. And in the end, it gives us a great story to tell because we can collect 10 different research projects, and our efforts are really to bridge from academic work to the profession. So we have an insights report that we put together every year that pulls out the most impactful insights from all the research projects, and then we push that out so organizations can see that information, hopefully adopt it. And just last week I was in D.C. presenting on research insights from our last round of research projects.
How difficult is choosing? I'm guessing you're getting some pretty unique applications in different areas. Are there occasions where you're like, listen, this is great. We've got this on the table. Please submit next year because we think this is worthwhile, but it's just not. It must be difficult figuring out which ones to do in a given year.
Yeah, absolutely. So we typically get 30 to 60 submissions every year, and then we fund about 10 to 12. This past year with AI, we got 90 submissions.
No
that
kidding.
Was really hard to go through because there were so many good projects that we couldn't fund. But the way we look at it is we want to cover many different aspects of, in this case, AI. And sometimes we'll get a couple different submissions that are on the same general topic. So we try to make sure that we're covering a lot of really important issues around underneath that one umbrella.
All right, folks, I'll bite. Funding is more challenging right now. I mean, you know, we've covered the university's money issues and the federal government cutting grants and whatever the heck they're doing down there. I would think funding has become much more of a challenge for you folks, or is that not true?
I think funding in general for research is across the board, particularly in communications, is a little bit challenging because a lot of the research funding that comes into the university is more science-based. It's STEM, where communications, there aren't really large funding institutions for that. And so there's a lot of pressure to get funding, which is why we see so many submissions at the Page Center. But the Page Center, we have an endowment. So Larry Foster, that Jonathan was talking about, established the endowment, was able to do a good amount of fundraising for us. So we have an annual fund that we're able to give away. So it hasn't been a challenge for us to give the money.
Okay.
I'd also like to add, like, I get the opportunity to interview all of our scholars shortly after they're funded. And my last question is always, can you tell me what this funding means to you and your work? And they all talk about how difficult it is to find money for these kind of projects. And they say, like, the Page Center is one of very few that gives us these opportunities. Across the board, they all say the same thing.
So it sounds like you folks are solid. Money-wise, you folks are solid, where some other entities on campus are like, uh-oh, you know, oh, no, you guys are good.
Yes, absolutely. For the Page Center, we're solid as long as the market stays stable, because it is an endowment. We are.
Now there's a thought. Okay. I didn't consider that. All right. Now, you folks don't work directly with students, but I don't know. I'm assuming now graduate students, maybe. I guess I mentioned during the break, we've had some fun where I've done some shows here over at the Hub with students, because I'm pushing 62 years old, and I want to get perspectives from 20-year-olds and 22-year-olds, because I know they don't think the same as me. Mm-hmm. So graduate students, you know, whatever research they're doing, can you tell, what are their perspectives right now? Do you have any idea what they're thinking when it comes to journalism today and ethics and the way we do things? What are young people thinking?
Right, yeah, absolutely. And I will say we haven't funded that many graduate students on journalism-specific topics and some broader communication topics.
Right, right.
But I will say, I'll speak to students in general, and I will say that the world of news is very different for them than it was when we were younger, where it was very clear, this is news, this is not news. I think that their experience of news, the way they get news, where they find news, is very different. A lot of them see news through social media, so it finds them rather than going out and seeking out news sources. So I think that creates a whole nother dynamic.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I also interview a lot of faculty here at Penn State, at Belisario College, and they say the same thing about one of the first questions they ask in, you know, COM 260W, Introduction to News Reporting. They ask the students what their news diet is, and they find out they really don't have a traditional news diet.
Yeah.
It's kind of looking at TikTok, and it's
something
just kind of catered to what you look at all the time. And they often reference this idea of news finds me, and it's just this idea that you're kind of in your bubble, you hear from your family and your friends, you hear from your algorithm, and that's your worldview. So they try to develop assignments and practices where they visit a news site and just... I spoke to the recent hire recently, and he said 3 times a day he asked the students to visit AP app or website 3 times a day and just kind of scroll through the headlines and see what surprises them, because he says the way they're doing it now, nothing will surprise them, because it's just stuff that's designed to fit their interests.
Yeah, it's such a different world. I mean, it's hard to... For me, it's hard to get my head around. And I'm consuming it, too. I mean, but it's like, it's just such a different concept. And being able to understand what it is you're consuming, I think, is, for any of us, a little bit of a challenge. It's like, all right, why am I getting this? What does this actually mean? And, again, just trying to sort through, all right, is this actual news? Is this opinion? Is this a little bit of a mix? And, you know, much more challenging, I think, to figure out what the truth is these days because of all of that.
Yeah, Jonathan, you mentioned two words that just makes me almost shake. One word is TikTok. The other word is algorithm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Somebody is controlling that algorithm to determine what everybody else sees. And that now, I don't know. We could maybe say that, all right, there was an editor of a newspaper, and he determined what stories are going to get put in the newspaper today. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe that guy was an algorithm. Mm-hmm. Or I guess I'm too old to understand really what an algorithm is. But when you said TikTok and algorithm, I'm like, oh, boy.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of a scary example, but one time I was just scrolling, this is a while ago, I was just scrolling through, and it was a picture of a dog fighting an alligator, and I was just made the mistake of watching it, and the alligator ate the dog, you know, and I was just horrified, and then for the next week, I got animals eating other animals videos, and like that just, you know, and that's just because I finished the video, it just locked me into this thing.
Yeah.
And it's, you see it in little stuff too, like watching old 90s NBA games, and all of a sudden I'm getting things about Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson, and just, you know, just because I finished it, or just because I spent a little bit more time on that post than others,
yeah.
you're stuck in that, And there's, I don't know, I know there's a way to clear it, but then you're just kind of back into it after that.
Yeah. Yes.
It's scary.
We have an X account, Twitter account, for our show. I don't know when I did this. I have no idea what I did. But almost every day, I get anonymous tweets from women from England who are soccer fans, and a lot of them are rather scantily clad. And I'm like, and Mr. Ironhead, I'm terribly sorry. I'm marking all these gals to be blocked, blocked, blocked. Otherwise, we'd have 1,000 followers on X, and most of them would be English women's soccer fans, scantily clad.
Huh.
You want to take
yeah,
over
the Twitter? Certainly wouldn't want that.
You want to take over the Twitter feed? Holy moly. Now, Denise, you mentioned corporate communications. What is the, is that just emailing? What when what does that mean, corporate communications? Just public relations stuff?
Yes, it would be public relations. And we say corporate communication, but we mean communication that comes from a corporation, a nonprofit, some entity that's trying to communicate either with journalists, but with directly with their public. So if you see, you know, communication in social media that originated with an organization of some sort, a corporation, even an advocacy group, that's the kind of communication we focus on a lot, because I think that's the kind of communication that we have to be very careful about, the ethics in that kind of in message distribution, because there's not a gatekeeper. You were talking about, you know, you've got editors in the journalism entity for the most part. I know it's shrinking to some degree, but you've got different levels of check and balance. In the corporate world, there's not necessarily that. And so it's really on the individual communicators and on the corporations or organizations to make sure what they're saying meets the highest standards of ethics, truthfulness, transparency, responsibility.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I went to your website again yesterday, and I lifted this line. It said, "Navigating today's complex media landscape." And my note after that was, "Pandora's box can't be closed." That was the note I wrote down. Jonathan, maybe that's just the pessimist in me. The pessimist in me says Pandora's box can't be closed.
I mean, in the terms of what we're talking about, I think, yeah, what's out of the box is out of the box. And I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of John and Vivian say, because I think it'll go along the lines of, how do you handle those things? What are the steps you need to do? Just to be aware that you might be dealing with disinformation or something that's AI made or something part of the algorithm. And how do you double check and how do you make sure what you're reading is true? And also, how do you find those sources that you can trust?
Well, the AI stuff in particular, I think, is going to be fascinating, because there are just so many offshoots from that. And even, you know, we've been talking about it just from the unethical standpoint. Right now, you can, and for a while, I mean, people have been able to edit together videos. It's like, oh my God, that person just said something absolutely horrible. Well, no, you took clips of, well, now with AI, I mean, it is getting really, really difficult to distinguish. All right, that is actually that person, or is this just a video? You talk about Pandora's box. I trying to get your head around that. It's like, well, no, I saw the video of this guy doing horrible things to that dog in that alligator. Right. It's like, well, no, that wasn't real.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, man, it just, again, hard to get your head around. And yes, there's going to be people that are doing it ethically, mm-hmm. using it right, and there's wonderful things, like so many tools that we have out there. Large number of people be using it for good and the right way, but being able to distinguish between those that are using it for absolutely horrendous intentions, man, it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah.
Big time challenge.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be challenging to stay one step ahead of it for the public. Just media literacy, like Jonathan was talking about before, but literacy around AI and knowing when to question something, using good critical thinking skills about what you're consuming, and then also one of our our panelist, John Iwata, he is working with, but he's working mostly with businesses who are investing in AI. So it's a little bit different than these bad actors who are creating or using AI to just, you know, create this disinformation and chaos.
Yeah. All right, before we let you go, let's repeat this event next week. I don't know, Jonathan, maybe the date, the time,
sure.
What is this? Give us the background again.
So this is Finding Truth, Building Trust on April 23rd at 10 a.m. That's next Wednesday, a week from today. You can go to thepagecenter.org to sign up. It's free. It's all online. Suki Dardarian, formerly from the Minneapolis Star Tribune, will be moderating. We'll hear from John Iwata, formerly from IBM, now with Yale. He'll talk all about how AI fits into this whole thing. And Vivian Schiller from the Aspen Institute, and from the journalism perspective, we'll talk about how, from that side of things. So we hope everyone can join us. And like I said, there'll be time for Q&A. You can submit questions live. And there will be a recording available afterwards as well.
So, again, this is an online event. Right. Anybody can tune in from anywhere, but you need to register first.
Yep.
And that link is on the Page Center, thepagecenter.org. It's pretty prominent on the page, as I recall, so it's not hard to find. Well, folks, I tell you what, thanks for coming in today.
Yeah.
Hopefully your endowment doesn't go anywhere, because you people and all the researchers tied to you are going to be extremely busy for the long foreseeable future.
That is for sure.
I mean, there should be no threats to your work, because you're going to be doing more of it, I think. So anyway, thanks again for coming in. We appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Both.